Welcome to Trail Bites for the week of October 14th, 2020. I'm Gavin Jackson. This mini pod is a companion piece to the South Carolina lead, and we're doing this to help keep you up to speed on what is happening on the campaign trail in the Palmetto State and what South Carolinians like you are thinking. This Trail Bite features an in-depth look at the latest on the South Carolina Senate race between Republican Senator Lindsey Graham and Democratic challenger Jamie Harrison. We're looking at recent polling, last Friday's debate, just kidding, it was a forum, more on that in a second, the record-breaking third-quarter fundraising haul from Harrison, and a bit on the Senate Judiciary Committee confirmation hearings Graham is overseeing. Joining me to break all this down is Meg Kinnard, a national political reporter with the Associated Press. Meg, welcome back.
Hi there, it is great to be back.
Megan Kinnard to friends, good to hear you. Meg, let's rewind really quick to last Friday. This debate turned into a one-on-one interview at the last minute. It kind of became the story of the forum. Kind of explain that situation and also what viewers saw from Harrison and Graham separately.
This was a confusing day. You know, I'm one of the reporters who's kind of a nerd for debates. I always look forward to them. I think that they're a really neat way to kind of showcase, you know, really what these candidates are like when they're put on the spot, when they are forced to answer questions and really make the case for themselves. But this particular day kind of devolved into a lot of back and forth between the campaigns over whether they were actually going to be in the same room at all. It started off with Jamie Harrison voicing concerns over Lindsey Graham's exposure to Republican senators, some of whom sit on the Judiciary Committee with him and he'd been talking with recently, and they're announcing positive tests for COVID. This came up before their first debate, and both Harrison and Graham were tested negative. And we know about Jamie's plexiglass partition that he brought in.
Yes,
that debate
yes.
went on. This one, however, Jamie Harrison demanded that Lindsey Graham take another COVID test, continuing to voice some of the same concerns, but saying that he really wasn't going to be satisfied until he had seen another result from the senator. Lindsey Graham said no. They went back and forth a couple times. And ultimately, the folks putting on the debate, Nexstar, decided that they would just do a kind of a series of back-to-back one-on-one interviews instead. So we got a forum instead of a debate.
Mm-hmm. And anything that jumped out to you on, we're going to get into that viral moment with Graham in a minute, but anything that we heard differently maybe that you picked up on that you reported from those one-on-ones?
You know, it did seem that we got into a little bit more substance. Again, I just said I like debates. I like to see the back and forth. But really, this format allowed for some more directed follow-up from the moderators, who were fantastic and who are broadcasters throughout South Carolina and did a really great job with this. But we really saw them pressing both candidates to give more details about whatever their policy positions were that they were voicing. We heard Lindsey Graham particularly asked a couple of questions about funding related to COVID relief packages. And, you know, both candidates were really kind of forced to get a little bit more granular. You know, a lot of times in a debate when there's a little bit more back and forth and talking over each other, and goodness knows we saw that in the first debate and in some mm-hmm. of the presidential debates we've seen too. But in this one, there really was a chance to get more substantive and to go a bit deeper and to actually get a bit more information as opposed to as much politicking out of each candidate.
It's a little bit of a silver lining there for an otherwise chaotic day. But
right.
I want to play this this clip. It's a full clip. It's about a minute 40 long. A lot of people have heard about it, you know, both here in South Carolina and, of course, you know, nationwide. It garnered a lot of attention from Senator Graham. Let's play this and then we can talk about it in a moment.
The one thing I can say without any doubt, you can be an African-American and go to the Senate. You just have to share the values of our state. Tim Scott is in the Senate. He's the only African-American Republican in the country. Nikki Haley is a daughter of Indian immigrants raised in Denmark, South Carolina. She became a governor. In South Carolina, folks, it's not about the color of your skin or where you came from. It's about your ideas. The reason I'm going to win this race is because my ideas, my conservative philosophy, my willingness to reach across the aisle fits our state. I am in line with Tim Scott and Nikki Haley. My opponent's going to lose, not because of race, but because he's aligned with the most liberal people in the country. He's raising $50 million from liberals all over the country to flip this state into the Democratic column, it's not going to work. So count me in for reforming the police. I voted for the First Step Act that gave African-American males and Hispanic males who've been imprisoned under the Joe Biden Three Strikes You Out bill. President Trump led the way. I worked with Cory Booker. There are a lot of people getting out of jail who were sentenced to long terms in jail for nonviolent offenses. They can go back to their families. They can get a job. 31% of our state is African American. I'm asking to every African American out there, look at my record. I've been supporting historically black colleges and universities, and I'm glad President Trump has made it a permanent fixture now. We don't have to beg every year for the money. I care about everybody. If you're a young African-American, an immigrant, you can go anywhere in this state. You just need to be conservative, not liberal.
So, Meg, that clip, the last 7 seconds of it garnered a lot of attention, you know, millions of views, thousands of retweets, thousands of likes and dislikes on social media platforms. It kind of got bookended there. When you hear the end and the beginning, because the beginning, Graham starts off talking about ideals and African-Americans sharing those ideals and being able to go far as a conservative in the state. But then you really just hear that end part and it just doesn't sound right. And it kind of makes for a really awkward moment, which we've been seeing play out. It seems like one of many awkward moments when we keep hearing about this discussion about race in, during this Senate race. What was your take on that and how do you think it's been playing out so far?
I've covered Lindsey Graham in South Carolina for 15 years, and from my post in D.C. before that for a total of about 18. And I would certainly never characterize Lindsey Graham as racist, as having prejudice when it comes to people of different racial and ethnic backgrounds. I do think that what you just played right there provided a lot more context than, you know, that last 7 seconds or whatever it is that really got a lot of people's attention on social media. Lindsey Graham is folksy, and that's one of the things that South Carolina voters have really loved about him, sending him to the Senate for 3 terms and to the U.S. House for several terms before that. So I think that this was his attempt to really continue to just be himself and to try to connect in that way that has been so popular and well-received for him. It came off perhaps a little flat, but I don't think that there was any malintent in there when he's talking about, you know, being black in South Carolina and needing to be conservative. You know, I saw some people on social media saying that that was a directive, and how dare anybody tell anyone, but in this case, particularly black voters, what kind of politics they should have, you know. And frankly, it reminded me of something that President Ronald Reagan said when he was being wheeled into surgery, you know, after the assassination attempt on him. And, you know, he's been quoted as looking at his team of doctors and saying, well, all y'all are Republicans, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that came off funny and people are still talking about it. I mean, here I am talking about it decades later. Ronald Reagan was a trained actor. He knew timing. He knew exactly how to deliver those zippy lines in a way just to make them hit just right. Lindsey Graham's didn't hit right, but I do think that his intent was to show people, hey, look, you know, I'm conservative and I sure would like it if people across South Carolina were conservative. And if you are, regardless of who you are, I'm your guy. That's what he was trying to get across. But, you know, his delivery wasn't exactly 100% Oscar winning. But I don't think that he had any of the intent behind it that we've seen from a lot of the commenters reacting to that on social media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. You know, using that saying, you know, you can be black and go far in terms of go anywhere in terms of politically. And I think that's really what was missing there at that last part.
Right. And, you know, I mean, clearly, Tim Scott is an example here in South Carolina. He's the only black Republican in the Senate. And he gets pointed to a lot for things being possible in terms of, you know, having a political success and being a conservative and also happening to be black. And for Lindsey Graham to be mentioning him as well as Nikki Haley in all of that context, I mean, that's not, I don't think, you know, him just cherry picking random political names out of the air. I mean, these have been some of his colleagues here in South Carolina working on behalf of the state. So he has the ability to kind of speak to some of that from a personal perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that can easily be shot down if Jamie does, in fact, win this race. But when we look at, you know, Jamie wasn't even on stage for this moment, But it's kind of an example of these kind of viral moments that Harrison continues to capitalize on, such as that plexiglass partition in the first debate. His first debate performance in general was overall pretty good, and he helped him raise about $1 million off of it. And then, you know, even trying to get Graham to take a COVID test. I mean, among all these other things, that has let Harrison control a lot of this narrative and raise boatloads of money. Now, we won't know what the latest fundraising is for this current quarter until after Election Day, well after Election Day. But we do know how much Harrison has raised from July through September. And it appears they were basically printing money, Meg. I mean, that's the only way to put it. What's the latest fundraising right now coming from the Harrison campaign? And what's going on with that?
I mean, it was all the headlines that anybody could see for Sunday and Monday in political journalism, with Jamie Harrison raising $57 million in the third quarter of this year. That's not only a record for him, but that is a record ever for third quarter fundraising in a Senate campaign. Those of us who were around in 2018 remember back to Beto O'Rourke's race for the Senate there against Ted Cruz, and his fundraising was crazy. And we looked at those numbers and said, oh my gosh, how do you spend all this money? Jamie's got even more, and he's got even more in South Carolina, where airtime and just about everything else is a lot less expensive than it is in a major state with Texas and its big time media markets. So, you know, the question is kind of, what's he going to do with that money? And I think we'll talk about that in a minute. But on Senator Graham's side of things, I think the deadline for them to report their third quarter fundraising isn't until October 15th. So there's, as we're recording this, there's still a little bit of time for him to put his numbers out. Going into this third quarter, both campaigns were matched at about $30 million. I don't think that we're going to see this kind of groundswell in third quarter fundraising for Senator Graham. But when you talk to folks on his team, when you talk to people around him, they're still feeling very confident that they're going to have the money needed to compete. And whatever it is that they're bringing in, it's going to provide them enough resources to go head to head with Jamie Harrison here in the last 3 weeks.
Because there's only, you know, so much airtime you can buy, so many digital ads. And, you know, we were talking previously about how Harrison has spent a reserve time through Election Day on TV and digital upwards of $60.3 million. You know, talking about $7 million a week in some respects. It's going to be interesting to see more details about how this is being spent, and especially how it's benefiting the state Democratic Party, because some of this money can go there. In the first half of the year, we saw about $436,000 go there from the campaign, which is totally legal, totally fine. Yeah. And that helps fund resources that benefit races now and in the future, down ballot races like state house candidates and others. These folks must just be rejoicing when they see these numbers come out. That it can help the state Democratic Party in these other races.
One of the questions I keep getting on social media, and it's a valid one, is from people asking, what on earth do you do with this? You know, you bought all the TV ads, even if the rates for the TV stations are charging are 4 to 5 times what they usually are, just because there's a limited amount of TV space. So why not get more money for it? Even if you've bought all those, even if you've bought up digital ad space, what else do you do? And there are several options for candidates at this level when you have some leftover cash. You can make transfers to the party, which is something that I know that the Democratic Party here in South Carolina certainly appreciates. You can also make transfers to other candidates, although those are limited to $2,000 per candidate per cycle. So that helps, certainly, but that's not a massive load off of some of your cash. You can also hang on to it. And in, you know, Jamie Harrison's case, if he's not successful this go around, there might be future federal races that he'd be interested in pursuing. And so if that were to be the case, and if he did have some of that money left over, that would be quite a war chest heading into any other race down the line.
Geez, I can't imagine what race you're talking about, but
let's
focus on
2020. It's such a mystery.
Let's focus on 2020. But we are seeing some of that money go for other kind of a different kind of advertising that you recently wrote about. You wrote about this third party candidate, Constitution Party candidate Bill Bledsoe, who dropped out of the race but is still on the ballot. So that's an interesting combination right there. And this is a factor that Democrats say can help Harrison at the polls on November 3rd. So give me a little bit of idea about how that could maybe help on a pathway to victory for Jamie, but also what they're doing to maybe actively make that into a possibility.
This is something that Democrats aren't really saying out loud, although if you read between the lines and talk to folks who've been around the political process and what to do with this sort of money, and if you look at past history, you can kind of see what's happening. On their side of things, Jamie Harrison's campaign acknowledges, yes, we are that name you've seen on digital ads is true. That the ad that pops up on websites that tells people that Bill Bledsoe is too conservative for South Carolina, that's being paid for by Jamie Harrison's campaign. If you click on that ad, it links to a whole website of information portraying Bill Bledsoe as too conservative for this state. That website is funded by the South Carolina Democratic Party. All of that's completely legal. Those are things that campaigns and candidates are empowered to do with their money. But if you think about the Constitution Party, if you think about Bill Bledsoe potentially representing some of the most conservative viewpoints in South Carolina politics, the theory is that if voters were to see all of that and be thinking in their minds, wow, Bill Bledsoe is the real conservative in this race. His name is on the ballot, even though he dropped out a couple weeks ago to officially endorse Lindsey Graham. The theory is that those voters would see that and would choose Bill Bledsoe in thinking that he's really going to be the super conservative candidate in this race, which he technically still is, since his name is on the ballot and ballots have already been mailed out across the state. But with a race this close, with a race where the margin between Jamie Harrison and Lindsey Graham is fairly narrow, depending on which numbers you're really considering, it could be more narrow in some places than others. But if you subscribe to that and you really see this as a very close race, then in theory, if there were votes that otherwise would go to Lindsey Graham and instead went to Bill Bledsoe, then that could take away from Senator Graham's cushion and potentially leave Jamie Harrison with enough votes to put him over the top. This has been done before. If you look back at other Senate races in different places, Arizona, Montana being two of them, we've seen major parties putting their major party candidates, rather, putting their funding behind a third party candidate to purportedly try to do some of the same stuff. It's been met with mixed success. It kind of depends on where you are and what the extenuating circumstances are, but it's been done before. And although it's not something that Democrats are really talking about out loud, it's happening here. And you know, I was talking to Republican Chairman Drew McKissick about it. And he's like, look, you know, it is play in politics, but to him, it was indicative of perhaps the Harrison campaign thinking maybe our numbers aren't as strong as we thought. We're going to go after every opportunity to really try to get over the top on Election Day.
Things you do when you have millions and millions of dollars in a Senate
it's
race.
A little
there.
Bit of spare cash just lying around.
And Meg, we can talk about polls. You just brought that up. You know, we saw the morning consult poll come out this week showing Graham breaking loose a bit from previous deadlocks. And then we even saw one from the Lindsey Must Go pack that had them again tied. Again, this is a little bit more, you know, you can read into this one a little bit more differently. But that one also showed a 3% support for Bill Bledsoe and then 5% undecided. So again, kind of what we're talking about here in terms of what kind of market share he's getting. But tell me about these polls and what that morning consult one is really kind of illustrating at this point.
All of these are interesting. They're certainly something that campaigns watch extremely closely. And we've talked about before that really one of the greatest things that polling can do is be used as a fundraising tool for candidates. If they see their numbers as very good, as Jamie has done with previous polls, I mean, he's raised millions of dollars off of polls that show his margin right there with Senator Graham. So they can be useful in that regard. Clearly, fundraising may not be number one priority on his side of things at the moment, but still, these can be helpful tools for campaigns to take back to their base, to take back to their mailing lists and their text lists and say, look, this is a close race. We really need to make sure that you get out the vote, that you get your friends to vote, that you make sure that to show up at the polls and support us. But when we look at numbers, particularly the morning consult poll, it's helpful. It gives us a sense of what one snapshot at one period in time was in the race. But I think that when you consider some of the other polling we've seen that showed this race virtually head to head, and then you see another survey come out that's got a significant difference of opinion between the two candidates, with Senator Graham in the lead in this one, it can perhaps go toward that argument that polls are not directly reflective of exactly what sentiments are. We just don't know what voters are going to do until they actually do it. We do, though, whatever these surveys are, we always have to keep in mind that we're talking about South Carolina. which has not sent a Democrat to the U.S. Senate since Fritz Hollings' last re-election in the mid-90s. So that is important to note. Clearly, the state has changed somewhat demographically since then, but the support here has been very strong for Republicans who have been running in statewide offices. President Trump's favorability here is also relatively high, and he has strong support. He and Lindsey Graham are running quite close together. And so again, as we've talked about, it's a difficult concept to think about folks who would go and support President Trump here, which many of them will, and then also opt away from the next Republican on the ballot, which would be Lindsey Graham. When you look at the poll from the Lindsey Must Go PAC, I think it's important to note that is a poll that they paid for. I'm not disparaging who did the poll, and I'm not disparaging anything about the PAC, certainly, but for any poll that is funded by a partisan organization or a candidate's operation, it is very valuable just to keep that in mind because, you know, again, as I've said and written about a million times, polling can be used by anybody basically for their advantage, depending on what they're trying to get out of it. And so, again, it is just important to take these partisan polls kind of with a little bit more of a grain of salt than you would with some of the other surveys.
Yeah, and again, that Morning Consult poll had a 6-point lead for Graham, but again, also did not include Bledsoe on that poll, even though he's still on the ballot, like we said.
Yeah, we don't know exactly how much support Bill Bledsoe actually carries with him, whether those people are going to vote for him on the ballot or those people are going to go for Lindsey Graham because they understand that they're now aligned. He hasn't been included in any of the surveys, and so it's still kind of a mystery. When he did run for Senate himself against Tim Scott several years ago, he got about 2% of the vote. So that's really the only metric we have in knowing how many people supported him statewide.
And Meg, just wrapping up, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how these numbers shift as well when we look at the fallout from the Senate Judiciary Committee hearings this week, dealing with the confirmation process for Judge Amy Coney Barrett, which Graham, of course, is overseeing as the chairman of that committee. Speaking of that, is anything jumping out at you from these hearings with Graham and how he's handling these? Have you been paying close attention? It seems like he's kind of walking a pretty neutral line. He's obviously very supportive of her, but it's not like it's Kavanaugh, Lindsey Graham, because this is a completely different situation.
This is a different situation. One thing that I took note of in the opening statements from the second day of these hearings was how much time and effort Senator Graham spent talking about South Carolina and specifically relating some of the issues that Democrats had been bringing up in the hearing to the situation here. In specific, he was talking about upcoming Supreme Court consideration of a case related to the Affordable Care Act. And Democrats have been bringing that up over and over in the hearings as something that they see as the most important for the next justice to really, you know, be considering closely and carefully. And in his statements, he mentioned South Carolina. You know, Lindsey Graham always talks about South Carolina. He's very quick to remind people his constituency and why he's there to represent their interests. But it seems that particularly as he's presiding over this process and is therefore not on the campaign trail, he has been taking some opportunities to kind of get into a little bit of a campaigny mode. I don't think anybody could blame him for that. This is the national spotlight that he's in, and he's speaking to the country, but also to any of his potential constituents here in South Carolina who are watching. So yes, he's had to carry out a lot of the official roles, but I think we've also seen him kind of inject these hearings with plenty of arguments that he's really hoping to make directly to his supporters too.
Very good there. Yeah, we'll see how that all shakes out this week and next week going forward too. So Meg, again, thank you very much for joining us. It's Meg Kennard with the Associated Press. Always good to hear from you.
It is absolutely my pleasure.
Thanks again, Meg. So great to have you back on. Love hearing from our regulars. And we also want to hear from you. Tell us about your voting experiences, who you're voting for, and what your top issues are. We want to know. People want to know. It's election season. Leave us a message at 803-563-7169 with your name, where you're calling from, and the top issues facing you in election 2020, maybe how you voted, if you voted early, whether it's been mail or in person, Let us know how your experience was, 803-563-7169. You can also follow me on Twitter at Gavin Jackson for updates. And just a reminder, Campaign Trail Bites is not biased toward any candidate or campaign. We're just covering these candidates as they come through and as we can get to them. We're out there trying to get you as much information so you can make your own decision in 2020. We'll bring you a mini-pod every time there's campaign trail activity in the state, aka every week until Election Day. Let us know your thoughts on Twitter at @SCLeadPod and follow us with the same handle on Instagram for photos from the campaign trail and, of course, our dank memes. Campaign Trail Bites is a production of the South Carolina Lead. I'm Gavin Jackson.